dojo, literally place of the way. Welcome back. This is Buddhist Books Podcast, episode 295. And when the number of the episode ends in 5, that means we read The Matrix and Diamond World Mandalas in Shingon Buddhism. So this is Shingon Buddhism Part 9 on Buddhist Books Podcast. If you would like to start at the beginning of the Shingon Buddhism playlist, or, you know, anywhere between 1 and however many episodes there are in your present time, you can click right here. That will take you to the Shingon Buddhism playlist. So, a few things have changed since Shingon Buddhism Part 8. We've kind of streamlined a few things and we've gone vertical. Portrait orientation rather than landscape orientation. So if you'll humor me for a moment, I just want to try out something new that I haven't done yet. I'll be doing in the editing process. So, normally here on Buddhist Books Podcast, we're reading the Tipitaka of pre-sectarian early Buddhism. Or Buddhism, if I make an effort to pronounce it that way, which then eventually, of course, became known as Theravada. This is King Ashoka, who converted to Buddhism after having conquered all most of what could in present day be called India, or is in present day called India. He didn't get to the southernmost tip. Most conquerors don't. But he did have under his rule or dominion or whatever parts of what would in present day be called Pakistan, Bangladesh, and I think a little bit of what would be called China and Afghanistan. Anyway, so he wanted everybody to be Buddhists, so he started building these pillars and, promoting Buddhism, and so it became kind of in vogue. People might be motivated by things other than seeking enlightenment, like being in good with the emperor, that kind of thing. So Theravada started to happen, and then eventually there were 14 different orders that were all claiming to be the only one, and that the other 13 were fake, and that kind of thing. Right around that time, Mahayana came into being, with the Lotus Sutra being mysteriously, produced, author unknown, in which it stated that all that stuff that came before are like a deer vehicle and another smaller vehicle that I've forgotten, it's been a little while, and that the new vehicle was the ox vehicle, the ox cart, the big vehicle, or the Mahayana, if you will, that was going to bring everybody to enlightenment, not just the monks in these elitist organizations that had evolved out of early Buddhism. Then, over the centuries, Tantra, mandalas and chants and incense and bells and all these various practices started to, develop and become more popular, and the working with specific deities and a lot of other things. And there was a Buddhist version of that, which came to be known as Vajrayana, which was introduced to Tibet. And when we read, these days we're reading the Padmasambhava, Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava. So when the clock strikes 0, then we read that. But when the clock strikes 5, we read Shingon, which is, we use the four-sided Vajra, Dorje, or Kongo in Japanese to represent. Since it had been introduced beyond Tibet into China, and then Kukai, as he was known when he was alive, came from Japan seeking out a newer form of Buddhism, or, that kind of thing. It happens every once in a while. Dogen did the same thing, but he found Soto Zen. But that was 200 years, or 400 years later-ish. And anyway, so Kukai became an initiate of Vajrayana Buddhism in China, and then he came back to Japan, and then he was kind of the ultimate authority, kind of the one man through which the hourglass of Vajrayana Buddhism came through into Japan. So in Shingon, they're always referring to, well, Kobo Daishi, as he became known post-mortem. Kobo Daishi said this, Kobo Daishi said that, and that means the ultimate authority in Shingon, or Japanese Vajrayana Buddhism. And this was all, of course, 400 years, as I mentioned, before Dogen came to China and brought back Chan and pronounced it Zen. By the way, these aren't in order of, like, you know, the lowest and the highest in the sense of, like, superior and inferior, but by time. So we're looking at it as a timeline. So anyway, thank you for humoring me through that. I just wanted to try out this new format of having this be vertical rather than above my head, as it was when we were in landscape orientation. Okay, you've been patient enough. I will go ahead and get to today's reading, and I hope everybody's having a good day today. Picking up right where we left off last time, so I'm assuming that you're all caught up. You know, you don't have to be. You can jump in and see what it's like from the standpoint of where we're starting. Okay, it looks like we're in the middle of a section. Oh, we're almost finished with a section. If I had read a little further, we would have finished this section. Well, all right, so last time we were talking about when it is said that the forms employed in Shingon rituals, mandalas, anthropomorphic images, mudras, dharanis, seed syllables, and samaya signs are symbols, the term is to be understood in a special sense. Right, okay, I remember that. So it's not that this refers to that, it's that the symbol is the thing that it's referring to. So it's sort of a transubstantiation of the symbol and the thing being symbolized. Okay, we can groove with that, I think. Okay, the Shingon symbol embodies paradox. The symbol and the signified are at once horizontally identified and vertically identified. The symbol simultaneously is and is not separate from what it signifies. Okay, so it's not exactly what I was saying. It's that and the opposite, hence the paradox. Okay. It signifies the void, but is itself void. That's true. That makes sense. I mean, intuitively. It signifies itself, since its form is voidness. The symbol and suchness are simultaneously separate and the same, dual and yet non-dual, or ninji funi in Japanese. The signifier and the signified are at once separated and collapsed, structured and deconstructed, conjunct and disjunct. Between the Shingon symbol and its referent, there is neither exclusive similitude nor exclusive assimilation, since similitude presupposes distinction and assimilation implies identity. Interpenetration, by contrast, subsumes both distinction and identity. Symbols emerge in space and time, but at the same time merge in suchness. They are simply specific and void. In the symbol, nothingness and existence are distinct and yet coincident. The esoteric symbol is not, as in Platonic and Neoplatonic thought, an imitation of a transcendent principle, as a mirror reflecting a universal form, but is a reflection of all particular forms, each simultaneously an accidental event, and voidness, as a mirror reflecting a multitude of inter-reflecting and ever-moving mirrors. Nor is the Shingon symbol significant by a fragmentary participation in an immutable and eternal reality, but by a total interpenetration with all phenomena and with the void. The esoteric symbol is not an illusory form giving intimations of the real. Esoteric Buddhism teaches that forms are not illusory, but real, just as they are, in their flux and ephemeral becoming. The symbol, as all dharmas, is unproduced and yet produced, produced and yet unproduced. And that's Fusho Jisho Shoji Fusho. That sounds familiar from a chant. Now you know what it means. The non-dual nature of the esoteric symbol indicates the nature of esoteric ritual. The ritual is a manipulation of physical, mental, and verbal symbols in which ephemeral appearances interpenetrate adamantine suchness. Identifying himself with symbols, the ritualist, just as he is in his conditioned and corruptible body, takes on the diamond body and diamond mind of the Tathagata. The Sadaka, the symbols he uses, and what the symbols signify, are fused and yet remain distinct. Okay, so there's some images I'll go ahead and put up on the screen above my head. For those on the audio only, if you want to see the main thing that's happening here is a YouTube video, but audio only versions of these episodes are being put up on Apple Podcast and presumably other podcast platforms can also. So some of you are hearing me but not seeing me. If you would like to see these images, go ahead and pull up YouTube and search for Buddhist Books Podcast and then Shingon Buddhism Part 9 and skip to 11 minutes or whatever. Okay, Figure 1, the seal of entry. Figure 2, the Vajra spikes. Figure 3, the mudra used to drive in the Vajra spikes. Figure 4, the mudra of the fence of Vajras. Figure 5, the diamond hand clasp. Figure 6, the fire kakra seal. Now, when they say kakra, I'm pretty sure they translate it as wheel, and I think it's no coincidence that chakra also means wheel. So I think C-A-K-R-A really is C-H-A-K-R-A. Figure 7, the hand clasp of the mind of truth. That looks like a pretty standard prayer hands. So there you go. Okay, now we're on to a new section. Longtime viewers know that we've been in section 3. There's a lot of numbers involved. So we started out with 1111, and then 1112, then 1113. Eventually we got up to 3, like big 3. Now we're at big 4. So this is section 4 of the book. The meditation on the Bodhimanda. The principal distinguishing characteristic of esoteric Buddhist doctrine is its insistence on the interpenetrative non-duality of the world of phenomena and the adamantine world of suchness, and the main distinguishing characteristic of its method is its insistence on the use of ritual as the most efficacious and immediate way to attain awakening. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, on one of the other, we'll be reading Shobo Genzo when we get to the 8 on the clock, and that's an example. Dogen talks about how silly it is for people to think that ritual has anything to do with Buddhism, let alone can get you toward awakening. So we're approaching not for the sake of like, well, let's see whose side we're on. I mean, you're welcome to have whatever relationship with the various schools of Buddhism that you'd like. As for me, I like to remain in a space of not knowing, to remain in a space of accepting all, not accepting like, yes, I believe this, but acknowledging and experiencing, okay, from this point of view, this is the way. From that point of view, that is the way. Okay. And then as I move through my day, I can notice, from this perspective, you know, I don't know. I invite you to become aware that such a possibility exists. You can have something other than rejecting all, accepting all, accepting one and rejecting all the others. There's a fourth and fifth option. Anyway, sorry, never mind. Okay. To locate the two mandalas, plus, I mean, sorry, there's so many things. I know that there's people who get annoyed when I don't just keep reading. This isn't a free audiobook, you know. Maybe there's an audiobook version of this. I don't know. But I think it might be illegal for me to just produce audiobooks for people. So I think that my stopping and talking about things is actually kind of covering my arse. No, but also, this isn't about me doing a free audiobook as a public service. This is about me reading these books that I've always been wanting to read and processing them, not just, these are the words. So sometimes I talk. It happens. It's just what we're doing here. If you don't like it, there's a lot of other channels. Anyway, in Japan, when you go to Mount Koyasan, or when you talk to people who are based in Shingon Buddhism, you'll notice there's the repetition of the phrase esoteric Buddhism. In esoteric Buddhism, it's like this. In exoteric Buddhism, it's like that. So if you say, well, doesn't the Buddha say this? You're thinking of exoteric Buddhism. In esoteric Buddhism, this. Whereas, on the other hand, if you talk to most Vajrayana Buddhists of a Tibetan orientation, whether that be in Bhutan or Sikkim, it's not just specifically the geographic region presently known as the district of China, of Tibet, or whatever they call it now. Anyway, that's a whole other story. Not getting into geopolitics. I think it's unfortunate when cultural and national identity and geopolitics soil and taint the teachings of whatever form of Buddhism. Although, you know, acknowledging that there is an exchange and an interplay between these two things. But anyway, regardless of all that, what am I talking about? Yes, there's more of a sense that Vajrayana, when you're talking to a Tibetan-oriented practitioner, there's more of a sense of Vajrayana being built upon the foundation of Mahayana, Mahayana being built upon the foundation of Theravada. And so there isn't like a rejection and disrespect. Not to say that there is here, not to say that there isn't either, but there, I think it might have to do with the historical relationship between, and how there were like different groups of samurais fighting in the streets of Kyoto over which form of Buddhism would, that the emperor should be in favor of, and this kind of thing. So there's more of a sense of like, well, yes, all of those 10 forms of Buddhism are what you call exoteric Buddhism, where we here up on the mountaintop in Koyasan are practicing esoteric Buddhism, which we would more commonly in the rest of the world know as Vajrayana and Mahayana / Theravada, or what they call Hinayana. Anyway, that wasn't even the thing that I was going to say. I'm sorry. So coming from a Western esoteric standpoint, I think that there's interesting like little light bulbs that kind of go off in the background, and I do have that in my background, so I can't help but think in terms of kind of like re-examining things like the LBRP and the opening by Watchtower from the standpoint of the ritual is the thing, you know, and also the ritual is not the thing, the opposite of that. Some of my dad's poetry. There's one particular poem where my dad said something to the effect of,
"Behold, the world of men is full of ceremonies, and they are like the eggs of the tarantula and the ancient web, from which the young have long since hatched and left to scourge the earth. And the eggs shift back and forth in the desert wind and have no essence, neither cause toward which they lead, and lost is the world of men. These ceremonies have in the fruits of their nonsense reaped vulgarity, and have become the harbingers of hypocrisy, and diverse forms of pompous frog-roar stagnation, and these wondrous rituals have even gone so far as to hypnotize men. And have, being neutrals, been taken up by the forces of Anramanius, and made to sound out false doctrine. So it has become that men in long dark robes shout that ritual's the thing, and they blare forth as male goats in heat from their demigod mountaintops, where men have put them in search to revere something tangible, for the wisdom of the infinite god has left their ceremonies."
Right, so that was me, technically, although calling myself Gwydion in that particular moment, reciting some of my dad's poetry, in which he was not a fan of ritual. Although back then he was, I think he was still Christian Scientist. That might have been 1959, so I don't know. He was coming from a particular place. I think he was grumbling and complaining about his best friend was Italian, so he might have been made to go to a Catholic mass or something and then was complaining about it in his poetry. I don't know. But anyway, but it seems like he was kind of talking about ceremonial magicians. I'm sorry, I'm getting far afield. All right. Back to the ranch, back to the reading. Here we go. Yes. "To locate the two mandalas in the context of ritual practice, this and the following chapter describe two important Shingon rituals, the meditation on the Bodhi Manda, or Dojo Kan, and the meditation on the body composed of the five forms, or Goso Jo Shin Kan. These rituals demonstrate the manner in which the considerations developed in the preceding chapters are applied in practice, and they introduce concepts that are directly relevant to the study of the two mandalas. The Sino-Japanese compound dojo, literally place of the way," some practitioners of kung fu and karate's ears are perking up. Yes, yes, tell me about the dojo. "Literally, place of the way," with a capital W. Next time you're in your dojo, you can trip out on that. You're welcome. Just a conduit through which these ideas are coming through. But then, again, so was the person who wrote this, and frankly, so was Kobodaishi. Anyway, aren't we all, really? Well, sorry. We all add our little bit to it as we're transmitting. What? Yes. Translates the Sanskrit Bodhi Manda. Ah. Aha. Dojo is Japanese for Bodhi Manda. Okay, now we're listening. Now we're paying attention, aren't we? Before it was, oh, another Bodhi thing. First there was Bodhi Dharma, then there's Bodhi Sena. Another Bodhi something something. Yeah, dojo. Okay, Bodhi Manda. Mandala of awakening. Okay, mandala of awakening came to mean place of the way, or dojo. All right, I'll keep reading. "Referring to the place where right awakening, or shogaku, is attained. Originally, it meant the place where the Buddha Shakyamuni," remember him? He's the guy from Tipitaka, the guy who doesn't want any weirdos around in the formal meetings, you know, that thing. Sorry, so in Tipitaka, we're reading some special things right now, the rules. Okay, anyway, Shakyamuni, the place where Shakyamuni attained awakening, the diamond throne beneath the Bodhi tree. So that's what the diamond throne is. Kongoza, it's not an actual throne, it's like roots of a big Bodhi tree. I mean, it doesn't have to be that. It's wherever you're sitting right now. if I attain awakening sitting here, this is the time. Never mind. Its meaning is now extended to include any place where a Buddha is worshipped, or a holy place of learning and practicing the way. In esoteric Buddhism, it more specifically refers to the enclosure, or mandala, in which Honzon is installed and the ritual conducted, and where the Sadaka enters the state of Kaji and attains the perfection of Buddhahood in the body. There are two forms of the ritual meditation on the Bodhimanda, the physical ritual and the principal ritual, the Ji Dojokan and the Ri Dojokan. The Sadaka performs the physical ritual externally, setting up a mandala space, and he performs the principal ritual internally, setting up a mandala in his own mind. Anyone familiar with the temple in Malkut? That came to mind. So there's a footnote that I feel like I should read. The Hizoji says that the principal ritual has a vertical and a horizontal sequence. In the vertical sequence, which does not derive from the two vehicles or the non-Buddhist paths, the Sadaka progresses from the causal position to the effect position of Buddhahood solely by meditating on pure bodhicitta. In the horizontal sequence, he contemplates spontaneously and fully all the Buddhas of the 10 Buddha fields, the 5 Buddhas, the 4 Paramita Bodhisattvas, and so on. In the Dharma world of his own one mind, these being manifested by the power of the Kaji, he effects with the 3 mysteries. Securing the boundaries, the mudra, and dharani of the Vajra spikes. You remember those? They were in the illustration. On the performance of the ritual in one sitting, and there's a footnote, the performance of the ritual in one sitting is the shortest form of the ritual. There are also forms of the ritual that take 3, 7, or 21 sittings. Okay. In the performance of the ritual in one sitting, the Sadaka first performs the rituals of securing the boundaries, in which he defines the boundaries of the mandala and expels the demonic influences that might hinder the performance of the ritual or harm the ritualist.
Hecos, hecos, estay,
biboy. Yeah, that's that in Greek. That's also me, but calling myself BT. There's other me's, if you were wondering. I mean, we're all one, ultimately. It's the paradox. Never mind. The Sadaka secures the boundaries of the Bodhimanda by wooden, or less usually iron or copper, Vajra spikes. So the demonic influences that might hinder the performance of the ritual or harm the ritualist, there's a footnote. There are many types of this ritual, ranging from simply scattering white mustard seed in the 6 directions, through to the recitation of the dharanis alone, or accompanying them with mudras. If I had to guess, I'd say the 6 directions are the usual 4, and then up and down? Like, maybe I'm wrong. Comment below if you have insight into that. Accompanying them with mudras. The Fuku Kenza Kukyo 2 and the Dharani Shukyo 1 describe the ritual of scattering the mustard seed. The Kuyohon of the Soshijikyo describes the rituals employing the Dharanis of, quote, the side boundaries of the ground, end quote, or the G Ahokai. The boundaries of space, or the Kukai, any relation? Is that the meaning of his name? Is the boundaries of space? That's a good name. The fence of Vajras, or Kongosho, right, Kongo meaning Vajras, Sho in this context, presumably meaning fence. The Vajra castle, Kongojo. The Vajra spikes, Kongo Ketsu. The wrathful Amrita Kundali, or Funo Kanro Gundari. And the second mother, or Bumo. The Dharani Shukyo 1 describes the rituals for securing the boundaries of the mandala and protecting the body of the Siddhaka, which employ the Mudra Dharani of the Budho Nsisa, what? The Budos Nisa, who destroys demons, securing the boundaries and exorcises maleficent beings. And that's exorcises, not like exercises. Like, hey, maleficent beings, come over here and work out with me. No, no, different word. End quote. Or Bucho Hama Kekai Cho Buko. The type of ritual used depends on the hanzo that is to be installed within the enclosure. The Mudra Dharani is often that of the Vidyaraja, or Myo-o, belonging to the Hanzo's section. The appropriate Vidyaraja in the diamond world is Trilokya Vijaya, or Gozanze, so that's Sanskrit and Japanese, okay, and Akalanatha, or Fudo, is appropriate in matrix rituals. Yeah, it's good to remember that, like, never mind. So it originally is in Sanskrit, not in Pali, because this was 1,000 years after people were speaking Pali, right? These teachings were being taught at places like Nalanda University. There's my wife and I at Nalanda University a couple of years ago, right? Before it was destroyed. And these concepts originally are Sanskrit and are preserved in places like Tibet and, you know, and Sikkim and Bhutan, where Vajrayana Buddhism is maintained and practiced, as well as in the Japanese form in Japan, where the Sanskrit forms are also remembered. So it's very interesting because you can look all over India. I mean, you know, nowadays there are Vajrayana Buddhists from Tibet and Bhutan and Sikkim. Sikkim is a state here, and it's been continuously practiced for centuries there. Yeah, anyway, what am I talking about? And but it had been wiped out from India for a long time, but then preserved elsewhere and then brought back. So it's interesting. Sometimes that all the geography and the history pops into my head when I see the Sanskrit. Sorry, sidetrack. It happens. I'm only human after all. And the Akalanatha, or Fudo, is appropriate in matrix rituals. If there is a differentiation into 3 or 5 sections, Akalanatha is the Vidyaraja of the Buddha section, Hayagriva, or Bato, or sometimes Yamantaka, or Dai Itoku, is that of the lotus section, Trailokyavajaya, or Konzoze, is that of the diamond section, Kundali is the jewel section, and the Aparajita, or Munosho, or Vajrayaksa, or Kongoyashi, if your brain is shut off, so is mine, is the Vidyaraja of the karma section. Okay. Most usually, however, the mudra dharanis used are Kundali. Why did I read the footnote? I'll finish it. We're almost toward the bottom anyway. Of the karma section, Most usually, however, the mudra dharanis used are Kundali Vidyaraja's 5 types of seal and Shingon for securing the boundaries. Right, okay, I forgot what we were reading about. End quote, talking about securing the boundaries. So, Procolo, Procol, Este, Profani, Barlas, Diumpala, Hekas, Hekas, Este, Bibeloi, LBRP, BRH, you know. But Buddhist and Japanese, so it's kind of... Never mind. There's other, no doubt, in other traditions, other ways of clearing the space for the magic to happen inside, you know. Anyway, sorry. The Vajra spikes, fascinating. Right. Most usually, however, the mudra dharanis used are Kundali Vajras. Yes, we were in the middle of reading that. Goshu Kekai Gundari Myo-o. The mudra dharani of the Vajra spikes, Vajra Kilakam and Kongo Ketsu, or securing the ground, Jiketsu, of the fence of Vajras, or Vajra Prakara Kongo Sho, or securing the four directions, Shiho Ketsu, of the Vajra net, or Vajra Panjaram, or Kongo Mo, or the net of the void, Kokumo, of the Vajra flames, Kongo N, or of the fire section, Kabu, and of the great Samaya, or Maha Samaya, or Dai Samaya. Okay, that was the footnote. The Siddhaka secures the boundaries of the Bodhi Manda by wooden, or less usually iron or copper Vajra spikes driven into the four corners of the Bodhi Manda. Wow. See, more than half of the pages are footnotes. This is footnote. So I feel like I should read them, right? Sorry for anybody who's like, oh God, not another footnote. Okay, footnote on the Vajra spikes. The Vajra spikes, or Vajra Kilakam, or Kongo Ketsu. I'm going to go ahead and not read the Sanskrit and Japanese for a while, because I feel like it's too much. I'm going to stick with the English just for now. Just know that I'm skipping over Sanskrit and Japanese. So if you were like wanting to learn foreign languages today, then I apologize. Okay. The Vajra spikes are variously referred to as the boundary spikes, the boundary Vajra spikes, ground spikes, Vajra spike boundaries, Vajra flame boundaries, etc. The spikes are 12 shi long, about 7.5 inches. Was it in centimeters? Don't know. And are driven about a third of their length into the ground. Okay. This, according to Nio Hanakyo, but Dharani Shukyo says they should be about 8 shi long, as opposed to what? 12 shi long. Okay. The texts describe a 3-prong spike, but both the Tomitsu and the Daimitsu use spikes with a single prong. The head of the spike has an 8-petal lotus closed in the case of spikes used in matrix rituals and open in the case of those used in the diamond world rituals. Above the lotus is an upward-facing crescent supporting a jewel, representing the jewel section, which is the section of initiation. The Dharani Shukyo specifies not 4, but 28 spikes, 6 on either side of the west gate, 4 at each of the other 3 gates, and 1 at each of the 4 corners. Anens Dainichikyo Gishaku calls for 52 spikes, 12 at each of the 4 gates, and 1 at each of the 4 corners. End of footnote. Okay. They not only delimit the borders of the mandala, but symbolize the firmness of the Siddhaka's bodhicitta, which harmful influences cannot move. The tzedakah symbolically drives the spikes into the corners of the bodhi manda by making a mudra in which the middle and ring fingers of the right hand are placed between the index and middle in the ring and the little fingers of the left hand, so that the tips slightly protrude. So this is very specific ways how to put the spike in the ground. Okay. Then the middle finger of the left hand is turned over the middle finger of the right, and between the index and middle fingers of the right. Similarly, the ring finger of the left hand is turned over the ring finger of the right hand and down into the space between the ring and the little fingers of the right hand. Next, the tips of the two fingers and the two index fingers are pressed together. The two thumbs are turned downwards and the tips pressed together. This mudra represents a single two or three-pronged vajra. That's what we're reading today. Whoo! A lot and a little. What did we go over today? A little bit about vaguely understanding the existence of these vajra spikes that you put in the ground in order to create a sacred space, perhaps, we could call it, in which to do your rituals for enlightenment, for Buddhist enlightenment, which is like, wow, this is really interesting, isn't it? Very interesting, fascinating, actually. And the idea of the physical act, using physical tools and, you know, magic wands and things like of that nature, might be, again, be familiar to certain folks who might know me from years ago. We come from the same background, right? Or, you know, people who don't know me but also are familiar with some of these ideas. It's an interesting thing. It's an interesting thing. I would say that it's also important to be able to do all these things without the tools or the actions. But why not use tools and actions? And why not treat them as one with the things that they represent? It's beautiful, actually. I mean, and it's a breath of fresh air for people who use a fire wand to invoke fire, you know, or whatever, that the lotus wand is not representing light, darkness, and all the 12 colors of the rainbow. It is those things. And by wielding them, you are wielding them. There isn't like a disconnect between the action, the magical act, and its result. The action is the magical act. So it's not about, I mean, you know, relating that to what's happening right now. Me recording this into the microphone, seeing it get recorded on there, and later the editing process and the uploading is the action. Not sitting there looking at the analytics and noticing that nobody's watching. This is the action is for its own sake, not for the expectation of going viral and becoming YouTube famous, right? And talking to my lower ego nature, that's always a little bit like, how come I'm not a celebrity? I put so much work into this. Yeah, they're there. I'm not shaming that part of myself either, you know. See, most people go through the learning process in private, and then once they feel like they can fake it enough, at the very least, then they, with an air of authority, explain it to you from their standpoint as an authority to you as a student at an ignoramus. Whereas I, on the other hand, am like, hi, I'm an ignoramus. I'm going to slowly try to learn this and film myself doing it because I have no shame. Anyway, I hope that you enjoy it. For those who are new or those who are old, I don't know. I did this on a different episode on a different podcast, and since it's there and I can just copy paste it here, today, let's see, let me try to remember. So you have the Buddhist books clock over here, and today we did a 5. That's Shingon Buddhism, hence the little red four-sided Vajra. But then tomorrow, as Edward, which is just me in plain clothes, you know, usually with glasses, I mean bigger glasses, I'll be finishing the Martin Luther series over on Chicken Philosophy. So Chicken Philosophy is another channel. You can click there if you want to see me read everything other than Buddhism. So Buddhist Books Podcast is where I read the Buddhist scriptures, which is half of the half of the 10 books I'm reading right now are here on Buddhist Books Podcast. The other half of the 10 books are on Chicken Philosophy that are unrelated or tangentially or distantly related to Buddhism. So anyway, then after that, as a character called Gwydion, who you remember with the red hat reciting my dad's poetry, then I'll be reading I Ching. So then after that, we'll read some Tipitaka because the episode will be 296. And then after that, I'll read some Meccan Revelation as Frater BT. You remember the one that said, Hekos, Hekos, so in my full garb, I mean, basically, as very honored Frater BT of the Golden Dawn, I'll be reading Meccan Revelation. So the personas rotate on Chicken Philosophy while the books rotate. And here on Buddhist Books Podcast, it's just me. So I gradually evolved over the course of decades into this guy, and then decided to honor my former selves by creating Chicken Philosophy and reading Carl Jung, in which he interacts with his various selves. So it's sort of a thing. I wouldn't strictly say it makes sense on any level. But anyway, so the pattern goes, this happens, 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 this happens. So you get an idea. So if you want to see everything I'm reading, then you can follow Chicken Philosophy and the channel you're on right now, Buddhist Books Podcast. So that's what's happening. So, yeah. Today was interesting. Looking forward to next time, but it'll be a little while. All right. I hope that you are doing well in your life, and thank you for joining me for this episode today. I'll go ahead and do the usual closing that we do on Buddhist Books Podcast, the prayer that my dad and I used to do at the end of our morning meditations. To the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, to the spirits of light among us and to the spirits below, we send out our reverent love and compassion. May all beings be happy. May all beings be serene. May all beings be in peace. Until next time.